up, everybody? Welcome to PSI Love You XOXO, episode 76. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty.
What I've done here is I've...
What have you done here?
I've dimmed my computer too much, and now I can't see it.
That's the worst when you dim the computer too much. It's a fine line to walk with screen brightness, I'll tell you.
It vacillates.
I also enjoyed your new mouse pad here.
Well, it's a note I was going to read. Let's get into that right now.
Oh, okay. Wow.
A gentleman from Billerica, which is a place in Massachusetts.
From Billerica, okay.
Sent me the following note. It says, "Hey, Colin, this is to celebrate the one small bright spot in the otherwise dismal year of Jets football. Thank you for all of the content. This is from General Lee, or Jen Lee, Jen, G-E-N, you know Jen, Jen underscore Lee underscore accepted."
I thought like the General Lee, like the Dukes of Hazzard car sent
and
you.
And here's the jersey.
Matt Forte.
Would you, from your formerly Chicago Bears, now the
Thank
Jets.
Thank God he got off that sinking ship to the flying high New York Jets.
Might make a move for Jay Cutler, so you might want to...
Take him. Just get rid of everything. I don't care.
What a disaster.
I mean, burn everything.
Exactly what I expect will happen.
Yeah.
Other thing is that I feel good this week. You know, the Colin was right scripts are becoming harder and harder for me to write for some reason. But there's a bright spot this week. Something I'm actually authentically excited about as opposed to fake excited about. Or just not excited about, which is typically my thing.
Yeah.
Just going to Los Angeles on a secret mission this week. Can't talk about it yet for 2 days. Has nothing to do with video games. And but I'm very excited about it and people will see that soon. But it puts me in good spirits.
Does it have to do with the video game movies? Are you going to save the Uncharted video game movie?
I am. I'm going to go ahead and meet with Neil and relay word to the writers from Neil that apparently they haven't talked to each other after all.
Yeah, yeah. No.
We have a question. I was going to put that in the news, but I decided not to.
All right. It's a reader mail question coming up, so don't worry about it. Don't worry your pretty head. What are you doing? What is happening?
I just want to get rid of this.
You could have just left it right there. She's left it on the back of your chair. It is clutter. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with this Matt Forte jersey?
Where? I mean, so I don't have a current Jets jersey, actually. I wore the Brickashaw Ferguson's jersey for many years because he was from Long Island, and he was on the Jets his entire career, but he retired earlier than we thought he would. And then I have, like, you know, old, like a Testaverde jersey, and like, I think I had a Lavernius Cole jersey when I was younger, like really random things. So, I mean, obviously you can't really rock a Lavernius Cole jersey anymore.
You can, throwback style.
That's like something you see a homeless man wear.
We put up. So I retweeted an image from Spring Break, circa 2002, I think, and it was me in a Jim Miller jersey. Only one person on Twitter.
I saw that.
Called that out.
I saw the jersey. I didn't know whose number it was.
My favorite thing about the Jim Miller jerseys is that the Jim Miller era of popularity for the Chicago Bears was so short that about a year and a half later, people just thought I was wearing a personalized jersey and they didn't realize that I was wearing a real player.
The Jim Miller jersey. I wonder. Yeah, exactly. You know, they got a cut of every jersey they sold. Yeah. I wonder if that was the only jersey he ever sold.
I got them on clearance from Dick's Sporting Goods, I think, in the suburbs of Chicago where Pat Noonan was working. He would ring me up when he saw a Jim Miller XL. Colin, what have you been playing?
Just Horizon.
Yeah. How close are you to platinum?
Well, I think I missed one of the trophies.
Ooh, because you have to have the option or whatever.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, so the secret is that we knew the trophies for a really long time. They just weren't syncing that we got word of what the trophies were. So we went through them individually. And my assumption based on the wording of this trophy, it was that...
Because this is get all optional party members to join your quest at the end or whatever.
And I was going through a conversation 5 hours ago into the game, maybe, and I think I lost that character. So I think
now here's
gone.
My question,
but I don't know. Maybe it'll pop. I don't know.
This is a spoiler for the side quest you're talking about, correct?
No, I don't even know what side. I don't even remember what character it was that I lost.
Okay, but you know you lost somebody.
I think so.
Okay.
I think I did. He walked away from me.
I would like the context of this because I saw Brian from PS4 Trophies respond to a tweet that I was on about this, mentioning this. What's wrong?
Oh, that it wasn't missable, or that,
that it was. Somebody asked both of us, and by the time I got there, he had answered that it was based on that. And I didn't understand that because when I had seen that trophy, you know, okay, make sure all optional people. Again, this is the most minor spoilers I would assume for what's coming
really
up. Is the fact, and when it did it, anytime somebody was like, if there was a thing of like, clearly it was a decision of like, which one do you think you lost?
I don't remember which character. It was a male character. We were having a conversation. I chose this thing where it was like, don't do that or something, you know, like, and then he was like, fine. And just like left. And that was the end of the quest. Like, and I don't know.
See, I don't know if that is it. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out. The thing about it is that, I'm 42 hours into the game now.
Yeah.
The interesting thing happened. I thought I was crazy, but I wasn't. Yeah. Was that my game actually crashed for the first time. And I went back onto the game. Then I was like, whatever. I just went back on the game the next day because I was going to bed. I went to look at the percentages. And it was like, I was at 82%. And it was 71% or something like that.
Mm.
And I was like, what? And then I went, but the hours were the same. Like all the quests I did were done. And then I tweeted out about it. And then Marty and Brian from Podcast Beyond were, so weird to say that, were like, no, because I was like, I feel like a patch fucked with this. And they were like, Brian said the same thing, that his like plummeted. So I got it back up into the mid 80s, but I have all the collectibles. I have a couple side quests to do. The one problem is that there's a this isn't really a spoiler. There's a like a hunting lodge,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we've mentioned this in the review.
And there's it all culminates. Maybe I don't think it's a spoiler. Like,
in a big hunt.
In a big hunt, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I did it. It was a great battle, a very flawless victory for me.
Flawless victory. Wow, that is a hard one to take down.
For
flawlessly.
Some reason, you got distracted by something.
Sure, you did.
After I killed the enemy.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think I broke the quest because when I go back to it now, it's like, talk to this guy. And I'm like, there's no, I don't know where he is. Like, it doesn't show me where he is. I feel like I left him behind in that field where I fought the enemy.
He's standing
by the
dead
body. But I don't know where the body is. Like, I remember it's like a canyon, like outcropping.
Yeah.
But, and I remember that because I had him running around this thing, like chasing me. Basically, I killed him actually without even getting hit, which is I'd never do.
Wow.
And he's like one of the strongest enemies in the game. So I was like, oh, it was a great battle. I was very full of myself.
Sure.
But I have no idea where he is. Like, and so I can't continue and that one's actually directly tied to a trophy.
Yeah, 100%.
So
you're fucking this up left and right.
So I have like 84% of the trophies, but I'm really taking my time with it. I'm at the precipice now. I know where it's like, do everything. So this is the next quest, you know, the last quest.
Yeah.
So I think there's only, I have all the shadow equipment, which counts towards your percentage. Got all the suns, the full suns, and the trial. So I blazing suns. So I, you know, I'm good to go. Other than that, I haven't played anything. I mean, I downloaded East Origins, which I'm like super fucking excited to play.
Yeah,
I'm gonna start playing that tonight. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of waiting. Like the Cosmic Star Heroine's still coming. I'm waiting for that.
I believe
Mass
that
Effect is
it,
still coming. Obviously, Nier Automata.
Yeah.
But what we were talking about before the show, as you agree, like after Mass Effect, I feel like nothing comes out. Like
it's quiet,
which is nice because I'm
it's
looking
been a
forward
really
to
a rough spring of games here right now, and that's the thing. When we reviewed Horizon, I was right there on the precipice of the platinum, but I sunk, you know, different trophies all over the place. So I got home last night from Vegas. First thing I did was boot up both PS4s, sink the trophies, and then beat the final Corrupted Zone for me. Popped the platinum on that. I was super excited about that. But it is that thing right now of like what I really want to play. I shouldn't say that because I am enjoying everything I'm playing. I'm playing Zelda on Switch. I'm having a great time. We'll talk about that on a different show. But I want to play A Night in the Woods. Like that
game's supposed to be great.
That looks awesome. It looks like since they announced that, they've been telling me that was my kind of game. And so I need to get into it. But where is the time? Because I'm playing through Zelda for review stuff over on the Gamescast and on Kind of Funny Games in general. And then on top of that, here's Mass Effect. Here's PAX East. Here's Nier. It's like, fuck, there's so much good shit.
You're going to play Nier?
Oh, yeah.
That surprised me.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were interested in that.
The stuff I've seen about it looks awesome. The RPG mixed with the action stuff, platinum. I like the style. It looks cool.
So you've just been playing Zelda pretty much?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I knocked off that, I think. But yeah, going on the road using that Switch.
That bulky ass Switch that I have deep regret pre-ordering, but still I'm going to get it.
You're going to do it too. Betty Ann gives you good advice. Your mom says, keep the Switch, you keep the Switch.
Listen, we all know what's going to happen with this thing. And this is just the reality of the situation.
Sure.
Is we're going to play Zelda. I'm sure Zelda's fantastic. I have no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And then you're never going to play it until the fall.
Now.
What are you going to play on that device?
April 25th, I believe. Double Dash. Or I'm not Double Dash. Mario Kart.
Oh, my God. The game's on the Wii U. It's a port. What is the new game that you're going to play?
I didn't play enough of it on there. That's what I want, brother.
God, you sound like a fucking apologist. You're really hanging out with Tim too much.
How am I an apologist? I'm telling you directly why I went. Anyways, Colin, we were talking about Horizon Zero Dawn. I got three Horizon Zero Dawn questions from kindoffunny.com/PSQ. You ready? Chris Brown says, hi, Colin and Greg. Is Horizon Zero Dawn worth getting for those of us who don't get along with open world games?
Yes, next question.
To give you an idea of my relationship with open world games, I used to consider myself to be a huge Metal Gear Solid fan, having played all the games from 1 to 4 many, many times. But I got to the point in 5 where I just didn't care anymore. The story was not progressing anywhere near the pace I wanted, and there was so much stuff that I really had no interest in doing any of it, but it needed to be done to progress. Having watched your review of Horizon Zero Dawn, you were both obviously quite taken with the game and make it sound like a must-have title. I'm very concerned that if I spend what is now a small fortune to buy the game, parentheses, the price of games jumped massively when the exchange rate to South Africa, African Rand went south, but hasn't dropped at all now that it's mostly recovered. I'll end up getting bogged down in the open worldness of the game and just stop playing it before I get to the end of what sounds like an excellent story. The same way I will never finish Metal Gear Solid 5. Love and kisses, Chris. As you said, no, play it.
I think it's fantastic. I mean, I think it's a must-play game.
Platinum took me, the Platinum took me 50 hours, according to my save. That was without guides for some of the, not the collectibles, but the knockdown collectibles.
That's another one. I'm like...
Yeah, I have a list if you need them. You can run through...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, did Gorilla give you one?
Yeah. You can run through, you can get it, you'll be fine. But that's if you wanted to do everything. Game took 30, 35 hours or whatever. Again, with a fair amount of dicking around. Tim in the other room is playing it like Uncharted, story to story, doing all this different stuff. I'm sure at some point, yes, there will be... Before you can go, I actually know for a fact, before you go to this next main story thing, you got to go help this guy do something. Okay, fine. Then you're back on the track. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
I think it's worth it. I mean, to put it into context, because I feel a little bit of open world fatigue sometimes too, and I especially don't like these dense open worlds, as I've said many times. You know, I can beat the game right now in probably an hour if I wanted to, so that would put me at like a little below 45 hours. I played Witcher for 45 hours or so and got almost nowhere. So I've done literally everything in the game. And by the way, man, there's the combat in that game. Really, there's a whole different layer to the combat when you really get into it. That's obvious because there's so many different weapon permutations, but even arrow types. Like, I was using fire arrows so much that I forgot that, like, I could just knock plates off these guys. And I've been the last 10 hours or so using the hard arrows, whatever. It's really
what
satisfying.
I like to do is
use
the fire arrows, electricity arrows, whatever their weakness is, bring them down, then get out the strong arrows, hardened arrows, take off their plating, find their weak spots, destroy them.
Very satisfying, very Monster Hunter esque.
Yeah, 100%.
Next, but not as fucking nerdy. Yeah. Next
Horizon Zero Dawn question comes from Lex Caliber. Hey, Greg and Colin, with your recent review of Horizon Zero Dawn, I think it's fair to say Guerrilla has made a massive leap in terms of their standing in the industry.
I'd say
they're now on a different level. Sony seems to have talent for allowing developers to achieve their potential. Naughty Dog, Sucker Punch, and now Guerrilla all seem to be examples of developers who have progressed from good to incredible. My question is, what do you think Sony's special sauce is here? How do they take these developers and give them the help they need to become some of the best in the industry? I think the answer is TLC. I think it's time. I think it's focus. This is what we always talk about. Exactly. It's taking people and incubating them. I think for any developer who's going to be working on multiple games on multiple SKUs, that's when it gets cumbersome and tiring, and you have to build for the base level of it. You have to sit there and say, I'm making this game, so if Xbox 360 is the top of the line and that's as high as I go, that's as high as I can go. And if PlayStation 4 is going to be the best it is, that's the best it can be, that's what it's going to be. But if I have to take into account that it's the best over here looking on PlayStation 4, but how do I dial it down for Xbox One or vice versa, or however you want to go, PC gaming getting mixed. You get things that don't necessarily run or look as great as they should. When you can give somebody like Naughty Dog, you say, all right, cool, make Last of Us on just the PlayStation 3, then bring it over to PlayStation 4 eventually. You give them focus, you give them time, you give them room to grow, and that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I have nothing else really to add to that other than the fact that it is kind of incredible when you compare Sony's first party to Microsoft's first party and just how completely superior Sony's is. And how much that injures, I think, Microsoft's ability not to get, like, this is actually part of what Colin was writing about this week, which is Sony's, I don't believe for a second people buy PlayStation 4s for Sony's exclusives. Like, I don't think that's true. I think what they do is they retain gamers and make them interested. The attach rate's high, all that kind of stuff. So I think Call of Duty and Destiny got way more players into the door of PS4 than Horizon, Uncharted, and every other exclusive will ever do, combined probably. But they stay.
Sure.
Because of the first party support that's just not there. And also, I think that with Microsoft specifically, like Halo and Gears, while fine series and very popular series, are not nearly as popular as they used to be and not nearly as resonant as they used to be. And those things are declining, and Microsoft's lack of investment in new IP of meaningful stature is also declining at the same time that Sony's investment in renewing and reinvigorating old IP as well as making new IP is actually coming to the forefront. These are happening at the exact same time, and that's bad news for Microsoft.
Not to be a fanboy or a pat on the back or anything weird like that. I think this speaks, when you look at what's happening with PlayStation and especially what's happening with Xbox exclusive lineups and resonance, I think you're seeing what I was talking about of why I didn't care about Halo or Gears of War all that much of the time. They're bro-y action movie shooters. That's fine. Obviously, that connected with a whole generation of people. But as those people have grown up, they're looking for video games that reflect the more mature themes. And I'm not saying we're fucking looking at high art sometimes here, but Last of Us' story, the character relations of Uncharted, even what's going to happen in Horizon when you play Horizon, that tantalizing thing that isn't just gameplay, isn't just adrenaline filled, I'm drinking Mountain Dew, I'm blowing shit up, my guns are awesome. And you saw Gears of War 4 try to do that, give a little bit more depth to these characters, but it still is this you expect it to be Gears of War, and they have to be Gears of War, and they deliver Gears of War, but even then there's a ceiling, I feel like, on how much of an impact that can make. Gears of War, Halo, these aren't going to make the impact of a Journey. They're not going to make the impact of the story of The Last of Us. And that's because I feel like Sony has matured with gamers, if that makes sense.
I also think that Microsoft has hedged its bets a lot by using second-party support. And so those games, you know, Sony has plenty of second-party games too, but actually more there too. But they pan out better, it seems like, and at least have a little bit more resonance. I mean, Bloodborne is a second-party game, and that's a massively popular PlayStation exclusive, as opposed to something like Quantum Break, which no one talks about, ReCore, which no one talks about, Phantom Dust, which no one cares about.
And I think that's because of the infrastructure and audiences they've built. And it's like one of those things. I liked Quantum Break a lot.
I'm sure it was great, but what I'm saying is I've not heard a murmur about that fucking game.
No, no, no. That's why I'm driving the car. Just don't jump out of the. Don't jump out yet, Colin. Don't jump out of shotgun. Is the fact that I loved Quantum Break. I never think of Quantum Break like that. You know what I mean? I played through it and I enjoyed it, and holy shit, the way they merged the live action stuff with the game, the way your choices mattered, I thought all that was rad. And at DICE, I ran into the guys from Remedy, and I was talking to them, and it was one of those things of sitting there being like, man, yeah, Quantum Break was awesome. So sorry that didn't sell better, that didn't, yeah, you know, that's just the way the cards get dealt sometimes and all stuff. And I think it's because endemically on Xbox, there's not an audience looking for that.
Yeah, that team should have bailed when they had the opportunity, I think. Or at least made that game multi-platform. It's the same with Rise of the Tomb Raider, where like Rise of the Tomb Raider would have been way bigger if it was on PlayStation 4. But again, you can't, I don't even know how the fuck we got on this conversation, but you can't judge, this is what I was saying about EA with Titanfall, with Microsoft's stance on Call of Duty Sports TV. Which is like, actually, those decisions were actually really smart based on the misread tea leaves at the time, which is that console gaming's dying. That from Xbox, it was like a tertiary concern or secondary at most that games would even be part of the product. And Sony just did something that was actually super unintuitive and it worked. And so I wonder how it all play out for Sony in the future. But what I know is this. I can't tell you one fucking Xbox exclusive that's supposed to come out after this year. Not one. Now, I'm sure that they exist. But when you think about Phantom Dust, Crackdown, Sea of Thieves, all these games that are coming to Xbox.
State of Decay 2.
Did you see my video last week? Oh, you're in it. With the worst pictures I can possibly find of you.
Thank you.
Which is you, of course, in the hat.
Yeah, I knew when you said the worst picture, I knew which one it was.
But after that, it's like, what is there? What is it? Like this year, you know, with PlayStation, and this is the seeds were sown a while ago to get this. It's like this year we had Horizon, which is fucking huge. You're going to get Gran Turismo Sport later. And my assumption is you're going to get one other game. I still think it's going to be Days Gone, but then you have God of War, and you have Spider-Man, and you have Death Stranding, you have Last of Us 2, and you know, etc. and so on, moving on down the list, Detroit Become Human, and these are all after this year.
Yeah,
so it's just like Microsoft's, and the crazy thing that did you see the maps from E3 that show the floor space?
Mm-mm.
Microsoft's booth is tiny, dude.
Right,
like Microsoft's booth isn't commensurate with someone that's showing hardware. We're literally talking about a booth that's the size of like Activision's booth or Ubisoft's booth. Sony's booth is many times bigger, much bolder. They're not going to be even in the same place anymore.
Oh, really?
They're moving to the other hall.
Oh, wow.
Nintendo and Sony have basically taken over that entire hall. So strange that Sony finds itself in such a dominant market position. And Xbox seems to be making strange decisions that are not keeping people engaged, because the most confusing thing of all to me about this, and I'm not trying to shit on Xbox, because I actually just made a comment was right that was very glowing about Xbox. People want to watch that on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. But the biggest confusion of all to me is like, why are you putting your games on PC? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the point of even owning this box? And they can't answer that question, I don't think, as compellingly as PlayStation can. Because the answer for many people, Greg, is like, I want to play Call of Duty. And I'm like, okay, you can do that in all these places. But Horizon and Bloodborne and God of War and Uncharted and all these things, as opposed to like, you know,
you can watch your TV through it.
And clearly it's not a Colin centric kind of thing. Clearly the market agrees. Xbox One is not even a third of the way to Xbox 360 sales after 3 years and 3 months. Not good.
Colin.
Yes.
You stumbled into something. I want to just keep the natural conversation going. I want to talk about the changing face of PlayStation. Mm. We had a whole bunch of comments and questions here written into kindoffunny.com/PSQ, just like you can to get your question read. First one comes from Josh Graff. He says, hey, Colin and Greg. Mm. Actually said Greg and Colin. Mm. I'm just used to the other way. With Horizon releasing today, it got me thinking about how this was originally supposed to be a release during the holiday season. Every year, the same question arises in regards to what is PlayStation's fall/holiday lineup, and is it going to be... regards to what is Sony's fall/holiday lineup is going to be, or as in the past few years, the lack of one. Since the PlayStation 4 launched in 2013, Sony has yet to have a first or second party holiday release of any significance, with the exception of Rezogun and Killzone Shadowfall in 2013 and The Last Guardian in 2016. Even without a PlayStation exclusive lineup, Sony, for the most part, managed to dominate the past three holiday seasons, relying on third-party support. So far, the majority of first and second-party PlayStation 4 titles have managed to come out somewhere between February and May. See list below. He went through and listed them throughout the years. I'm not saying that Sony isn't concerned with the holiday lineup, but maybe it just isn't as important as it used to be. Could part of PlayStation 4's dominance be related to Sony strategically positioning their exclusive games in the months where there is less competition for major third-party releases? It seems to me Sony is taking the right approach with their exclusives. While it will always be important to get holiday sales, it seems to be almost, if not more important, what you do and after, before and after the holidays to sustain the momentum. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Then he runs it down, of course. January in 2017, Gravity Rush 2. February 2015, The Order. 2017, Horizon and Neo. March 2014, Infamous Second Son. Helldivers in 2015, Bloodborne in 2015. April, Ratchet and Clank 2016, Alien Nation 2016, Persona 5 in 2017, and then May, Uncharted 4 of last year or whatever. This has been the argument we've had back and forth a few times on this. The fact that I think in the beginning it was so weird that PlayStation 4 didn't have anything. The order slipped. Oh my God, what are they thinking? And then the console continues to sell like hotcakes. Order comes out, not that great, but whatever. Same thing the next year. Uncharted gets bumped. You don't have to worry. Uncharted is not around. Okay, but PlayStation 4 is still selling. Do you think at some point they are accepting that that is the fate? This year, are they putting out a game in the fall, you think? Are they going to have a AAA?
I think they will, but I mean, I don't... Maybe it's Gran Turismo, but I've come to terms with the fact, you know, I don't want to be redundant with the upcoming episode of Commons, right? So I won't get too deep into it because we talk about this a little bit, but, or I do. I mean, there's no way I wrote it. So unless I have like an imaginary friend, which is possible.
I'm sure you do.
This entire generation represents the improbable or the unlikely, right?
Mm-hmm.
For those that have been following games for a long time will know this generation of consoles was supposed to be DOA.
We thought this was going
to
be the last one.
And in fact, Wii U was supposed to be the harbinger of things to come for the console makers. Remembering that console had a head start and came out in early 2012. So, I mean, they had, 2012? Yeah, early 2012.
Wii U? Yeah, yep. It was a year before.
I think so.
PS4, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so my assumption is that it doesn't matter. And that, like I said, and because this is a tacit kind of admission on my part, which is that I thought exclusives were too important. And when you really look at the evidence, whether it's PlayStation 3 having a bajillion exclusives that didn't matter at all. I mean, so many fucking exclusives came. Boxed exclusives.
Twisted Metal.
Exactly. Or I think the bigger example is Wii U. No one's going to out first party and out exclusive Nintendo ever, as long as they make hardware, in terms of the resonance quality and importance and quality of their overall catalog. The Wii U was outsold by the Vita. So clearly, exclusives with nothing else doesn't push hardware. But clearly, having everything else but no exclusives, Xbox One, doesn't push hardware either. You have to have both. And that's what Sony has in a generation that, by all accounts, shouldn't have had any business doing this well.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just the combination of the both things that Sony has. Nintendo has the exclusives. Microsoft has everything else. Neither has what the other wants. And Sony actually has both. And I think that's why it works.
I think one of the reasons it works, too, is the fact of what we've talked about since the February PlayStation 4 reveal event is that they came out and they spoke to gamers and they doubled down on gamers. And that's why they ran away. And I think, to our point earlier, I think gamers have grown up. We are grown adults now with disposable income where, no, it isn't. Games need to be released in the holiday season because I need to put them on my Christmas list. You can release Horizon right now, and I have the money here, $60. Let's get it.
I think you're right in the sense that, you know, there's some, like we talked about, the dubious statistics that suggest like half of gamers are women. No, they're not. That half of, all these other like kind of ridiculous ESA statistics that like kind of give you a weird painting
of what the game's
like, because we look at it with our own eyes and we're like, well, that's just demonstrably not true, you know.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying that that's right or wrong. I'm just saying, like, when I see statistics like that, I'm like, it's just not true. But the statistic about age, and that the age is actually rising every year along with the gaming industry's age, is indicative of exactly what you're saying. And I think you're right that there's just that gamers are older, more discerning, maybe in some ways less discerning when you see the game, some of the games that do well. Actually, I'll take that back. Gamers are extremely not discerning. But you see people willing to put their money where their mouth is and spend more. And yeah, I'm sure that that existed when we were younger with older people. Like my uncle John played Nintendo when
he was a much smaller piece of the
exactly. pie. And so I think you're right. I think that things have just spread out. And I think that Sony probably was more nervous in 2014 and maybe even 2015 by missing like The Order, for instance, not being ready. I'm sure that that was a nerve-wracking thing for them, even though I'm sure they knew The Order sucked and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But I think as they've seen things play out over many falls now, not many, but a few falls and a few winters, that they're like, we don't need these games. Like it just, we don't need them at all. Actually, Horizon makes a lot more sense now, although Horizon would have made even more sense in April or something like that when it was a little slower.
Sure.
So I think that they're just playing a calendar game that you can't possibly win or lose in every respectable way. You have to just play your hand, and they've done it. And I think they've done it with great success. And Horizon is well, we'll get into it. You know, it's the expectations are. You know, I felt a little embarrassed actually a few episodes ago when you and I had a conversation of Horizon sales expectations, and I said I can see it doing as many as 10 million units. And afterwards, I was you kind of shot that down, and I think reasonably so. And I was kind of like, maybe you're right. And then when I'm seeing the numbers from people that actually know what they're talking about, I'm like, oh, I think I was actually right. You know, like.
Well, they're saying 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we'll get into that.
And that's also, but that's analyst predictions. I hate that shit because I always worry about it. I hate seeing the bar get set too high. You know what I mean? Like when Pactor comes out and says something. And don't get me wrong, Pactor's great. I love him. So are you. And we all predict this stuff, and then it happens or doesn't happen. But
yeah, I just don't really. You know, I just kind of guess.
Yeah,
but
you read the tea leaves.
I do. Well, I know what I'm talking about, whether people want to believe that or not. But so when I saw the high end, I'm like, yeah, I was still too high, but there is a bullishness outside of our own ecosystem for this particular game that I think is indicative of what we can expect for quality-driven exclusives over the next few years. Because when I look at the slate of exclusive games, my assumption about the six or so that we've mentioned is that all of them are going to be great, and probably the worst one will be Days Gone. If I were just, and we have no reason to believe or know that, but just looking at them, seeing some of them being played.
Yeah.
Having played some of them ourselves, when I look at those AAA exclusives, I'm like, it's a good slate of games.
Hell yeah.
And when you look at what Microsoft has, I'm like, I don't think you have much of anything, actually. Like I said in our video last week that, or my video last week that, you know, Sea of Thieves is clearly going to bomb. And I called, I was like, it's their dreams. Like, you know, no chance.
It but looks like, fine. It looks, first of all, I didn't think it looked fun, period. Those guys over there, when they went and played it at E3 last year, like, oh, it's totally fun to be in a room playing on 4. That's not going to work online. Like, go fucking, hey, you know, fucking come stain 92, go take down the main sale so we can turn. Like, what the fuck? That's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's not. So I think the only game that they have over there on the other side, and my hope is that they have a bunch of exclusives that they're going to announce alongside Scorpio, which it would be a reasonable expectation. But, you know, Crackdown 3 is the only one where I'm like, this could be great.
Yeah.
The other games, you know, State of Decay is, I'm sure, going to be fun. And I don't know. I concluded my video last week about Xbox. I kind of just feel bad for them because I actually think the console's good.
Yeah.
And that if it just wasn't compared to PS4, it would look a lot better.
100%. Final question here for the changing face of PlayStation before we begin the show. Valkyrie X says, hey guys, do you think Sony is moving in a direction where they're going to take less and less risks on creative projects like Puppeteer, Tokyo Jungle Flower, The Last Guardian, Tearaway, etc., because they are games that don't sell well and will never chart an NPD? Instead, they'll focus their resources on big AAA games with franchise potential to sell millions of copies. Do having niche titles like Gravity Rush and Unfinished Swan benefit their portfolio in any way, or are they ultimately just sunken costs? This is something we go back and forth on. I think last episode we talked about the fact where I was trying to drive home this point that this is a different PlayStation, for better and worse in certain ways. And I think the days of sitting there and incubating something super small like Tokyo Jungle or Flower, or, hey, here's this little thing that we like and we believe in, blah, blah. I still think based on that E3 presentation last year that was AAA stuff, the way their exclusives are slotted now and the way PSX presents things, I don't think those games are going away. I think they have different opportunities to exist. The way you see Edith Finch getting picked up by another publisher, there's still people out there who are going to be down. You know, Night in the Woods coming out the way it's coming out. Like, the way that there are people there to support smaller things, you're going to get them. But I don't think PlayStation has an interest in that. We see with Sony Santa Monica and XDev.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that XDev has been basically cleaned. So the short answer to the question is yes. Their risk aversion is way higher now because I think that they weren't seeing the returns that are necessary, or maybe small returns that are better for a company in the red and not for a company in the black. What I mean by that is that, like, a company in the red will look for profit anywhere. A company in the black wants big profit. So, we know people at Sony Santa Monica and other XDev things that they're gone. Like those game, you know, a game like Bound, a game like Jesus Christ, what was the game where you flew around?
Hohokam.
Like, what? All these games, they're never going to do games like that again. you know, and also the evidence is on, like, who, you know, Edith Finch, like, the, like, Giant Sparrow, as far as I understand, is not even internal anymore. It's like working out of Sony Santa Monica. Like, they've killed that entire contract that they had, which was identical, as far as I know, which is, or as far as I can tell, which is, was identical to the one that that game company had. Yeah. And I clearly, these guys can't deliver a game on time. So I'm not, you know, I'm not super surprised, as far as I understand, about even the Unfinished Swan. That game was really late. And that game came out 4.5 years ago. They're not exactly like splitting the atom over there, so I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but I'm sure Sony got tired of that. And I'm also sure Sony got tired of like working with all these different studios and being like, it's cool, it's fun to have this dynamic thing, Tokyo Jungle and Puppeteer and all those kinds of things, but Puppeteer bombed, you know, like Puppeteer bombed. It like wasn't even remotely positive about the way that game did critically, but commercially, but critically it did really well. So I think to your point, I think that they're going to rely more on just outside indies. But then that comes to the problem I've talked about a lot, where there's just too many games now. There's too many games being released. We'll see it again this week, I guarantee you. That hurt everyone. That the bottom is going to fall out of the PSN just the way it did with Steam, and just the way it did a long time ago with the App Store, if they're not careful. So they have to get their house in order in that respect. But yes, they're hedging bets and taking bigger AAA bets that cost more money and will make them more money than they will with the Tokyo Jungles of the world, I think.
Do you think the solution to the PSN being inundated with games, and like the Colin was right about mobile ruining everything, is the solution the fact that there are going to be trusted publishers who put out Edith Finch, that put out other games on that smaller scale, that you understand there's behind it? Meanwhile, the publishers that, like I was talking about a few months ago now, where I went through and watched all the trailers for the games we'd never heard of, and I noticed it was the same publisher putting out all these games, are they going
Devolver or whatever?
No, not Devolver. Devolver, not even. No. I'm talking about like the ones that you've never heard of with like fucking clip art graphics. It's all the same thing. With them putting out that, won't they learn they're not making money on PSN, so they'll back off and not do it?
I assume so. I mean, it could be the spreadsheet approach too, that the early adopters do make a lot of money and they push everyone else out.
Sure.
And then there's nothing left.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I have major concerns about PSN. Someone needs to do something about it, but they're not going to. I mean, they're clearly asleep at the switch in many different ways.
Which is just staring at them
with their digital offerings, with the functionality of PSN, with name changing, with trophies, with all these kinds of things. I mean, I forgot to put it in here, but you can buy trophies in
there. That's topic of the week. Don't worry about that.
Which we'll is like incredible. Like that is an incredible affront.
Save it. If you didn't know, ladies and gentlemen, this is PS I Love You XOXO. It is kindoffunny.com's PlayStation podcast. So go there, subscribe to the YouTube channels, back us on Patreon, keep the mics on, of course. Peace, I Love You XOXO is the number one PlayStation podcast on the internet, all because of your support. Thank you so much. We post Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. Also remember, if you're going to PAX East, the Kind of Funny panel is Friday the 10th at 8:30 p.m. in the Dragonfly Theater. Will we be boozing? Oh yeah. Colin, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be Roper's Report. Time for some singular possessive news.
There are 12 items on the list.
Wow, a real dozen.
Number one, PlayStation VR hasn't only sold extremely well so far, it's actually surpassed Sony's expectations. The New York Times reports that Sony has sold 915,000 VR units as of February 19th. Sony's original projection was that it would take them 6 months to do 1 million units. February 19th marks the fourth month PSVR was on the market. The New York Times notes sales predictions of 243,000 for Oculus Rift and 420,000 for HTC Vive, meaning PSVR is beating both of its competitors combined. In the piece, Sony's Andrew House notes that Sony is hopeful of supply meeting demand as spring rolls around, and that the VR unit should be for sale in the Latin American markets towards the end of the year.
Great numbers. Really good piece too.
I read the whole thing.
I love the idea. I love how they framed it around that people internally saying like we got to dial back our numbers, including Andrew House, who's then like I was wrong.
Aaron asked an interesting question about this that I didn't think about though. That piece has a complete dearth of engagement numbers. People buy these things, like you and I bought them and enjoy them and have them, or actually we got them. I sold my pre-order to Kevin, but
Big Kev Doc.
Who are people playing it? Are games selling? That's actually way more important and interesting than the units being sold, because there was a lot of excitement and PlayStation has a hardcore fan base. But remember too that 1 in 55 PS4 owners have one.
Sure.
So it's not.
You hope though that by getting the number out and we're ahead of projections, it shows number one that Sony still is like, okay, cool, this is moving ahead, so we need to move ahead on funding cool shit, AAA, whatever it does, you know, things that of that nature. And I do think that the there's you know, GDC's happening right now in San Francisco. I definitely think there's an undercurrent there of people know Job Simulator. They know Arkham. You know what I mean? Like, they know these VR experiences that came out that, sure, there's some VR out there that, you know, nobody played. Who knows what's happening with it? But there's stories in there that if you make something of quality, it's going to rise. Like, you know, just coming off of DICE and all the other award shows that we saw, like, people know what was were the games on VR this year.
Sure. I agree. We'll see how it all plays out. I think we'll see how they treated at E3. That will be a big...
That's going to be a huge
part. Very interesting thing. Number two, the sequel to Middle-Earth, Shadow of Mordor, is real. It's called Shadow of War. Oh. And will launch on PS4 as well as other platforms on August 22nd in North America and August 25th in Europe. The announcement comes on the heels of a leak from retailer Target, which put the game up on their site along with box art, a confirmation of the developer, Monolith, not surprisingly, and more. I mean, this game is so obviously in development forever.
Well, the first one was, frankly, good.
We've known that for... Yeah. I mean, we just couldn't say anything. But the... the first game is very popular and very beloved, and I'll be interested to see. I like the date, August.
Yeah.
Very smart. Get out before the Call of Duty Battlefield Fiesta, plus Red Dead's going to kill everything around it.
Yeah.
Number three, which might actually be a good reason why Sony should... My suspicion, by the way, just as an aside about the fall, this fall, is I wouldn't be surprised if Sony has a deal with, and Red Dead is going to be a bundle. And if that's the case, then they shouldn't put anything out.
I really hope it doesn't get pushed.
It's not going to get pushed. I don't think they would have announced the date. And that game's been in development also forever.
I know.
Number three. Although Grand Theft Auto 5 was delayed.
Exactly. That's the thing, is I wish it was as easy as, oh, they put a date on it, it'll be fine. Everything's going to be fine. Like, we have so many examples of everybody fucking around with this shit.
I forgot the GTA 5 was delayed. Number three. Horizon Zero Dawn is officially a critical darling, and research firm Superdata is bullish about the game's sales potential. GameSpot relays words of Superdata's expectations, which are 6 million sold by the end of 2017, with overall sales netting around 8 million. Uncharted 4 Thief's End is assumed to be the best-selling PS4 exclusive to date at 8.7 million units as of early January of this year. So if Superdata is right, Horizon will be in very good company.
I hope so, man. The game deserves it.
I think it's going to sell very well. We'll see how it all goes down. Number four. I thought this was interesting. I don't know. You probably knew this. I didn't know this. Number four, we know Kojima is making Death Stranding for PlayStation 4, and we know it's going to be profoundly weird based on its trailers, but we still don't know even what kind of game it is until now. In an interview with the PlayStation Blog, Kojima confirms that it's an open-world action game, quote, with a lot of freedom. You have a lot of freedom of choice to do what you want to do, and you can get in vehicles and so on. If you are a fighter, there's plenty of opportunities for that. If you're not the type of player, there are other ways to play the game. I can't really say much more. But it's an open-world action game that's very intuitive to play. Once you get into the world and start to explore more, we're hoping there's something that you've never seen before, end quote. Kojima also confirms that the game can be played both online and offline, though the exact nature of what that means is unclear. I assume it's like The Division, not gameplay-wise, sure, but in that spirit. And obviously, you did an interview with Kojima.
2 hours, he talked about that, yeah, and it confirmed what the kind of game it was. The thing, my prediction...
No one picked that up in the news, because I didn't see that running around anywhere. That's so weird, because no one knew what kind of game it was.
People suck.
I guess journalists at those outlets would have to do, you know, work.
the thing in the 2 hour Kojima interview I did that's up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames is what I'm predicting for this game, and I can't, is that he said it in there, right? That we hope a few hours in, this is something you've never seen before. He made a big point when we were talking about what this game is, and that it's open world. Once you do an open world game, you can't go back. It's got to be open world. It is action. You can fight. He kept talking about like spears though, and this close interpersonal combat. And he's like, there's guns too, but this is what I'm talking about. He kept talking about connections though. And then he's like, and he keeps talking about like, when you watch the trailers, the game's in there. Like, if people can figure it out and sort it out, nobody has yet. Nobody's cracked the code. It's in there. And what I think about all the time is, he kept driving home in this interview connections, and like, I think literally he's talking about, you know, not literally, but in the trailers, Norman Reedus being attached to the fetus, right? Reedus's fetus. Then you got Mads Mikkelsen, the connections to all these soldiers that then break away. Guillermo is sort of holding a baby, whatever. I have a feeling, and I don't know how he would do this, but he's the crazy enough AR, you know, the fucking bandage Moby Dick guy, loving all that shit. He said in my interview with him, like, game's already started. It's happening right now. You know what I mean? Like, that's how he views this. I don't know how, but what was telling for me with that background was talking to him about it, and he's saying, yeah, you know, I think people are going to get two or three hours in, and they're going to feel like this is something different. This is something special. Start seeing the things. I think somehow this game is going to pull from your social media, your personal feeds, your Facebooks, and somehow craft things in the game that you're going to be going and be like, oh, that character is named Colin. That's weird. You know what I mean? Mm. Shit like that. And then a few hours in, you're gonna be like, wait, this isn't coincidence. Like, these things that are happening and what I'm reading in report, I don't know how you would do that. I could be a million miles wrong on it.
But it's interesting.
The way he talks about connections, the way he talks about the game already starting, the way he talks about something you've never seen before, That's how it would be. And that's how I think when you're talking about it'll be how do you play it online, offline kind of thing. I don't think it's going to be multiplayer massive kind of shit like that, but open world somehow pulling from your life, your like more shit similar to Psycho Mantis. Of your, even if you're playing offline and you're playing the PlayStation 4, oh, you've platinumed Horizon. You know what I mean? Like, I can see what you've done on this.
That'd be very interesting. That's a really nice idea.
My prediction.
You just hype that game up way higher than it's probably going to be. Now, the... yeah, the, and as far as your news not getting out there, people are tired of the state of games journalism, as we all are. Have an interview with Jason Schreier going up next week, the week after GDC, that I think you guys will enjoy about the importance of games journalism. Also, as an aside to that, I hadn't talked about this at all. I was so shocked just with the continued failing of games journalism that the piece I did about tariffs wasn't picked up by anyone. There's literally two outlets, us and Polygon, that wrote anything about the fact that your video game prices are probably going to go up, and here's why. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a bunch of sources and talked about the production pipeline and where games are manufactured and why this all matters, and no one wants to talk about that because it's not clickbaity enough, because it's not
a sexy
top 10. So sick of that shit. If anyone had the wherewithal, they would have known that was important information that could have gotten their site weeks before the PlayStation blog posted it. It's like, does anyone do that anymore except for Jason and Patrick Lepik and a few other people? Does anyone give a fuck? Because the audience does. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Jesus. It's annoying. Number five. In an interview with IGN, you're going to like this one. I don't know if you saw it. Marvel Games creative director Bill Roseman.
What up, Bill?
Confirmed two very interesting factoids about the upcoming slate of Marvel games. None of them are tied into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and none of them are tied to any movie releases, as in timing. Here's what he said to IGN in part, quote, "We want to give developers freedom to tell their story. We want to make it an original story, ellipsis. We're not going to rush things. We're not going to get things out before they're done. We're also not going to try to do very tricky balancing acts of trying to make a game that adapts a movie and get it out in the same window as the movie," end quote. So what we already probably knew, but confirmed.
What I've been predicting for a while, yeah. And that's why, again, I mean, we have a Gamescast topic going live on this week, of just why Marvel's doing everything right, I feel like, right now with how they're making these video games things and how they're building this portfolio.
My argument, they could have done better. Number six.
I disagree.
I'll be interested to see what people think of that argument. I think those are two cogent arguments that we made on that particular episode. Number six. Sony published Team Ninja developed PS4 exclusive Neo is officially a commercial hit. In addition to being a critical hit, Silicon Era relayed word from Japanese website gamer.ne.jp that 1 million copies have been sold so far. The game was reportedly underprinted for the retail market. Numbers would presumably be even higher if Sony could have kept up with demand. In the meantime, Neo's got fucking amazing positive vibes going on in the games industry right now, and congratulations to Team Ninja and to Sony for picking that up late in the game. I have no idea what Tecmo Koei was even thinking letting them do that, but there must be some monies. Someone at Sony, I assume, went and really played it and was like, we have to acquire this as soon as possible. Just give them money. It's huge. It's going to be huge. And I assume that Neo will reach 2.5 or 3 before all said and done.
Nice.
Which I think would be...
You can get back to it?
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I really think that it was a lot of fun. I'm terrible at it, but it was a lot of fun.
Sure.
But this is what we were talking about before. It's like Mass Effect's going to be soon. I want to play Nier Automata. I think Neo's going to be one of those games that in that lull, April, May, June, which I'm hoping we're going to have, that I just delete it and just delete the save and start again.
Sure, restart. Man.
Number 7. If you're a next level PlayStation 4 fanboy, you may care about this. Seems that Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy isn't exclusive to the console. After all, Sony and Activision never said it was per se, but the game was revealed at Sony's E3 2016 press conference and shown off further at PSX this past December. And because of Crash's PlayStation-based heritage, there was some assumption it would only come to PS4. However, the Twitter account of PlayStation Ireland noted that the game would, quote, be coming to PlayStation 4 and PS4 Pro first, end quote. A since-deleted tweet said it was exclusive. So something is amiss. Not a huge surprise. I didn't really think about it too deeply. That's a surprising one with all the exclusives that they get from third-party publishers like Neo and second parties, that they didn't secure that one.
I think
you have to assume that maybe their expectations are just not that high for it. And my expectations for it are not that high either. So.
See, I feel like there's two... Well, really? You don't think it looks good?
I mean, no, I think it looks good. I don't think it's going to sell.
Oh,
like,
I see what you're saying.
I don't think that they probably looked and they're probably...
I mean, this is the problem with tweets and this being the fucking source or whatever. I would say they're deleting the tweet because... That doesn't make sense, right? The coming first thing. Because I could have sworn one of our fans tweeted at somebody involved with this thing and got a response of, no, it is exclusive to PlayStation.
Vicarious Visions or whatever. Yeah, this is the newest information we have.
Fucking
hot off the presses.
All over the place.
Number 8. Square Enix has created a new internal studio. Studio Istolia, located in Japan, will be tasked with making a game called Project Prelude Rune. The interesting wrinkle here is that the studio will be headed up by Hideo Baba, the man behind the Tales series, who has... joined Square Enix. and was at Namco Bandai for like 2 decades.
What does that do for you as a Tails fan?
It's fucking devastating. Silicon Era reports that the studio will ultimately work on original IP, and like the aforementioned Project Prelude Rune, as well as IP that Square Enix has already developed. I'll be interested to see how Tails will continue, but I'll be interested to see how it continues without him, because he was so incredibly influential in that. Also, it's really weird that any prolific Japanese developer really leaves their companies. Now you're seeing this more and more. Maybe we're just paying closer attention, but Inafune, Iga, mm-hmm. Kojima, Baba. So four pretty big names in their respective genres. So we'll see. We'll see what Project Prelude Rune is. I'll be on day one if Bob has anything to do with it. Number nine, Irrational Games has a new name. Boston-based studio is now called Ghost Story and is led up by Irrational lead Ken Levine. I'm going to see if I can see Ken when we're in Boston. We'll see what that happens. A statement on the team's website reads, quote, founded by 12 former Irrational Games developers, our mission is simple: to create immersive, story-driven games for people who love games that ask something of them. While we believe our new games will have strong appeal to fans of BioShock, our new focus allows us to craft experiences where the gameplay is as challenging as the stories, end quote. Sounds fucking awesome. Irrational was originally founded... There's a typo here, Greg. Gonna have to fix that for myself. Irrational was originally founded...
One day you should publish all your notes.
I should. My memoirs... Irrational was originally founded in 1997, and its first game, System Shock 2, came to market in 1999. The team is best known for BioShock, which launched in 2007, as well as BioShock Infinite, which came out in 2013. Number 10. Four big names from Telltale Games have officially left their San Francisco-based developer for another one, Ubisoft San Francisco. Senior directors Dennis Leonard and Nick Herman, narrative director Pierre Charette, and creative producer Adam Saracen are the four guys who made the move, with combined credits on games ranging from The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us to Tales from the Borderlands and Minecraft Story Mode. It's unclear what they'll be working on, but the quotes from Ubisoft in their blog indicate it's something new.
To be clear, that's a huge fucking deal. That is a huge deal if you like Telltale Games. I've been working with those guys, you know, whether it be on Walking Talking Dead or whatever the fuck we call the IGN show where we did the recaps to Tales, to Batman. I mean, those guys have been a brain trust at Telltale forever. I went and did when I went down and hosted stuff at South by Southwest into the gaming awards or whatever, hung out with some of them there. Like they've been in this for a long time. They do great work. And again, I can't say this enough. Tales from the Borderlands was awesome. And I think that was Nick's project.
And they were taken together.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I would have loved to hear how that was all done.
Yeah. 100%.
All for one,
yeah,
one
and
for
Dennis
all kind
of. And Pierre, I had done a lot of Walking Dead stuff with. I remember Pierre was in there for when I went down while they did the recording for, now Madden Mikkelsen is on the guy from Reservoir Dogs who was in, Walking Dead, the season 2.
I have no idea.
Okay, it's no big deal.
You want me to look? I'll look for you.
No, I can keep thinking. He talks like this all the time. This is how he talks.
You are talking about Michael Madsen.
Michael Madsen. No wonder I couldn't get Mad Mikkelsen out of there. That's what it was. Thank you. Mechanism cleared. Very nice, man. Scary. Intimidating, but very nice. Remember that? That's how you knew he was a good dude, is that I had met him.
They didn't knock Kevin out.
No, I had met him down when I did the Walking Dead show thing or whatever, where I was talking to him, did an interview. And then when he came through, his agent emailed me and was like, hey, he wants to come by IGN. I was like, okay. And then he grabbed Kevin's shoulder and then he broke him in half. Joke slam, by God.
Number 11. Congratulations to Mojang and Microsoft, because Minecraft has now sold 122 million units, with 55 million individual players playing the game each month.
Good Lord.
Word comes by way of Minecraft's Twitter account, which celebrated the amazing milestone at 122 million units. Minecraft is very easily the best-selling game of all time, if you discount the 8,000 versions of Tetris that have been sold over 30 years, which amounts to a combined 500 million copies, which I think is bullshit. I hate how that's counted. I think it's so dumb. So congratulations, Minecraft, which in my book is by far the biggest game of all time. And number 12 is a wrap-up. Futuristic racer Lightfield is coming to PS4 at some point in the future. Stealth game Serial Cleaner, which looks pretty cool, is coming to PS4 at some point in the future. I think it's like you clean up after murder scenes, I think.
Oh, nice.
Like, and finally, Ruiner, which will also look cool. A top-down looking shooter is coming to PS4 at an undetermined point in the future. You can go read a PlayStation blog's postings for those if you want.
Colin?
Yes?
I enjoyed spicing it up, putting some questions here and there as we went.
Do what you gotta
do. So here you go. RVarge007 wrote into kindoffunny.com/PSQ just like you can and says, hi, Greg and Colin. Now I have a bone to pick with you about a question you read last episode. When you read the question about relating to female protagonists, my eyes rolled so hard that they got stuck looking up. I'm writing this via speak to type, like somebody who just discovered the novelty of this feature and doesn't care how dumb they look yelling into their phone. I can't even see forward anymore, which has led to some uncomfortable situations. This morning, for example, I bumped into what must have been an old lady, and she pulled me aside and yelled, "If I wanted to know what's coming to the mom and grop shops this week, where would I go?"
That wasn't a very good
Much love from NYC Ricky. But he's from New York, so you got to love him.
I love him. You get some extra points. The upcoming, I don't know. It's a list.
You got a list of games from the drop.
The wheels are falling off.
Were they ever
50
on?
No. Here are the games for this week, Greg.
Okay.
A King's Tale Final Fantasy 15 comes to PS4 Digital. It's out the first, so that is a Wednesday release. Set in a fictitious 30-year... What a weird way to start a sentence. Set in a fictitious 30 years before Final Fantasy 15. Guys, Square Enix, Final Fantasy is fictitious. You don't have to say that it's fictitious 30 years before the fictitious game that took place.
Well, I think maybe this means it's not
the
canon of the world.
Talking about? Set in a fictitious 30 years before Final Fantasy 15, this game features retro-style visuals centered around a fast-paced combat system with influences from modern gaming. The in-depth combat system blends intense attacks, devastating magic, mighty summons, and unique companion attacks into a singular gaming experience through three diverse locations in the world of Final Fantasy 15. Which apparently is not fiction. ACA Neo Geo NAM 1975 comes to PS4 Digital. It's out the second, so that is a Thursday release. NAM 1975 is an action game released by SNK in 1990. It was one of the first ever games released on Neo Geo. Players take on the role of U.S. Special Forces soldiers braving a harsh battlefield as they try to survive a series of deadly firefights. I wonder where the game takes place.
I don't know. If only we had some clue.
What was with the Japanese people's obsession with Vietnam? Metal Gear. Dying Reborn comes to PS4 and PSVR Digital. Old school puzzle solving gameplay reminiscent of adventure game classics mixed with impressive first person visuals that make for a gritty and immersive experience. Fans of movie series such as Saw need to look no further.
Oh.
A mysterious fish head nemesis.
Oh my God.
A grudge, a series of never ending trials, and a shocking ending will satisfy all your needs. Look at the.
All right. That's just. That says Don. Kevin, do we have Sky Cam for this? This is just, it's just a fish head in a thing. Rotate it there. Bring it over there. It's a fish head, Kev. Kev's going to punch in on Dying Reborn, which is just a fucking floating fish head. You can see it right there. It's a fish head. Dying Reborn. But it's PlayStation VR, so hey, cool. Thanks, Kev. Good work.
Hopefully my murder plans for Greg weren't open on the computer.
One of the tabs, how to kill Greg. Poison chicken wings.
Next time I know we're going to do something like that, I should make a bunch of fake tabs. That'd be funny as hell.
Porn.
Forma 8 comes to PS4 and PS Vita Digital Crossbuy. This game's been percolating for a while, I think. Forma 8 is a unique take on the Metroidvania action-adventure formula with a striking visual style and a huge world to explore. As a small exploration probe, Forma 8... You're stranded alone on the surface of an alien planet. Separated from your companions, you have a life or death mission to accomplish. Find and recover a lost, powerful energy source before it's too late. Are you ready to encounter? I'm sorry, are you ready to uncover, not encounter, the truth? Don't encounter.
I'm not really ready.
I'm going to play that, I think. Ghostblade HD comes to PS4 Digital. Ghostblade HD is an intense bullet hell shoot 'em up game with satisfying and addictive score-based gameplay.
Oh, right. My favorite kind of gameplay.
Designed with a modern graphic style and special effects, Ghostblade also features an awesome two-player mode. Ghostblade HD is easy to learn. Finish the sentence.
Difficult to master.
Yet hard to master. Grim Legends The Forsaken Bride comes to PlayStation 4 Digital. Within the shadows of an ancient forest, on the bottom of a foggy valley, stands the lonely village of Ravenbrook. The folk there are cheerful and diligent, yet warily superstitious.
Oh!
They surround the village with countless charms to keep the evil spirits at bay. For on the other side of the forest, there lies a seemingly bottomless pit, known as the Abyss. It is the place the villagers of Ravenbrook fear most.
You told me like you would give me a ghost story there. The sheets are over our head. You got the flashlight under your chin. Your hands are all over me.
Over that dick.
Oh!
Horizon Zero Dawn comes to PlayStation 4 Digital and Retail. Horizon Zero Dawn is an exhilarating new open world action RPG exclusively for PS4, developed by the award-winning Guerrilla Games. Killzone. That says that in parentheses.
Oh, okay.
Take on the role of skilled hunter Aloy. Terrible name. As you explore a vibrant and lush world inhabited by mysterious mechanized creatures and go to the moon.
Where she lives.
Mm-hmm. I love that people... Aloy. On NeoGAF, I ran into someone because they're like, you spoiled that. The very fact that I was excited about the setting, everyone's like, which is not the moon, everyone was like, oh, you spoiled it. I'm like, I spoiled the fact that it takes place somewhere. Get a grip. The Incredible Adventures of Van Helsing comes to PlayStation 4 digital. Put on your wide-brimmed hat, grab your weapons, and embark on an incredible adventure in the gothic noir world of Borgovia, where mad science threatens the fragile peace between monster and mortal. Be Van Helsing, monster hunter extraordinaire, and save the day with your charming and beautiful companion, Lady Katarina, who happens to be a ghost, by the way.
Oh!
Explore the savage wilderness and the mountains and the soot-stained brick districts of grim metropolis twisted by weird science. And don't forget, you might never know who the real monsters are.
Is it me? Is it me, the player? Or is it just Greg Miller?
I hope so. I think it's just you. Stranger of Sword City Revisited comes to Vita Digital. From the present day to the parallel world Iscario, survive in the land of Polar Night. Enjoy the tried and true fundamental charms of the dungeon RPG genre, such as character creation, dungeon exploring, and item collecting. This is a really bad write-up, guys. Really, really bad.
Oh, man, they tried, you know?
They really didn't. No, I mean, that's didn't. A really probably one of the worst things I've ever read. It's not true at all. I used to edit freelance reviews at IGN sometimes. They were worse at times. Remember that one that we wouldn't even publish?
Yeah.
Suikoden 4 comes to PlayStation 3 digital. PlayStation 3 digital is a PS2 classics. A prequel to the acclaimed role-playing series Suikoden. Suikoden 4 reveals the origins of the Rune of Punishment.
The Rune of Punishment!
Although set in the past, Suikoden 4 has no shortage of innovation as it features a tactical formation system of more than 60 playable characters. Torment Tides of Numenera comes to PlayStation 4 digital and retail. Explore Earth 1 billion years in the future in the science sense really far away. Explore Earth 1 billion years in the future in the science fantasy setting of Numenera. Discover the ninth world built on the bones of extinct hyper-advanced civilizations and leave your own mark on it. Make thousands of essential choices, face the consequences, and meet death incarnated as you seek the answer to the ultimate question. What is the ultimate question, Greg?
Are we alone?
Actually, it's what does one life matter?
Fuck, god damn it. I don't know. I assumed a billion years from now we got aliens down here doing shit.
The Walking Dead, the Telltale series, A New Frontier comes to PS4 retail. Mm. Telltale's award-winning series returns with its third season, A New Frontier, continuing the emotionally powerful storytelling seen in seasons 1 and 2. We return to one of gaming's most beloved characters, Clementine. We see her story through the eyes of Javier, a young man determined to find the family taken from him. Also known as Javier.
Put out episode 3 already. I'm sick of hearing soon.
WRC6, they seem to be less organized than they were with Batman. WRC6, yeah. Well, probably because they had to work with DC on it. WRC6, PS4 digital retail out the 3rd, so this is a Friday release. On a racetrack, it's the car that makes all the difference.
That's a strong statement.
In a rally, it's the driver.
Oh, shit.
WRC6 puts you to the test. Fog mud, punctures, night racing, engine breakdowns. You have to deal with it all.
Fog buds, you've been dealing with a long time, Colin Moriarty.
Pick of the week is obviously Horizon.
Of course. Come on. I don't be silly by Horizon. Stupid. How many times I got to tell
why
you
why
are
you being stupid? Today
fucking idiot.
Today I tweeted out that if you don't like the Golden Girls, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I also want to just let you know that if you don't like Horizon, you're a fucking idiot.
Right. No reason not to like it.
No.
Don't be stupid.
None.
Topic of the show. Tots. It comes from an old friend of ours, Colin Moriarty, Zyger1337. Zyger writes in and says, hey, Greg and Colin. And pack a lunch because he's going to write. He's going to talk for a while. My question this week is about PSN trophies and a possible new trend regarding them. Nier Automata comes out soon, and as the internet recently discovered, you can buy the game's trophies. To be clear, you can only purchase the trophies using in-game currency starting after your second full playthrough of the game. There doesn't seem to be a way to purchase the in-game currency with real money for the time being, so it's all done in the game. My question is, do you think this could possibly set a new, possibly more mischievous trend for PSN trophies? This is the first time in all recorded PSN history where you can buy your way into a platinum trophy. To be fair, only after the second full playthrough of the game and only with in-game currency, but that's only this example. What's to prevent a developer from making a My Name is Mayo type game and having a trophy that requires you to play for 1,000 hours or pay 99 cents to add 1,000 hours onto your current playtime and pop the trophy? For Nier Automata, I suppose it's a fair system, but I don't want to send developers the message that it's okay to sell PSN trophies. Below is an image, and we already saw this stuff. You read the article too, right?
Yes.
And then he put an edit.
Maybe people aren't familiar with it if they need background.
Oh, but double two. Well, I mean, he actually did a really good job explaining it. And then he puts an edit. Most sites say you can begin purchasing trophies on your third playthrough. Thus why I said after your second through your playthrough. However, some are saying it's after your third playthrough. Basically, you got to play the game multiple times. And the screenshots are in Japanese, which is making this a bit more difficult. Colin Moriarty, where do you come down on this?
It's a disaster. It's totally, it's not only, this is so serious, actually, that Sony needs to, like, make sure this doesn't happen. Like, actually, pull this functionality out. It's not fair to the ecosystem. We often talk about how platinum trophies are not all created equal. That's obviously true. But they're counted the same, and that's also true. But we still exist in an ecosystem where at least there's agency in the developers' choices to say, like, well, we're going to make a hard platinum, we're going to make an easy platinum, we're going to make an unfair platinum, multiplayer trophies, whatever. We don't like some of those things, but they have the agency and the choice in which to say, like, we're going to do that. But you have to earn them. So, like, I had a huge problem with My Name is Mayo. This is 10 times worse than My Name is Mayo. You know? Like, for, I don't care how many times you have to play it. If you can go into a store and just ping trophies by buying things in the game arbitrarily to get those trophies, not because
the trophy isn't spend 5,000 gems. Exactly. It's just buy the trophy right now and it pings for you. Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And is an economy breaking situation. What I mean by that is like we never had a situation where we can just arbitrarily go. Yeah, like you said, you grind things to get trophies all the time. This is, and I know that some people are not going to care about this, but a lot of people will care about this, and this is not okay. And now, the Nier Automata Platinum Trophy officially means jack shit. If I even see anyone have that now, it's going to be laughable because I'm going to be like, I can't believe that you earned it.
Sure,
you know.
The thing about it is, for me, it's Zyger's slippery slope that is the scary issue. That this I think. Here's the thing, is that if it's your third playthrough you can buy, we're just going to say, your third play you can play it, you've put so many hours into that game that I don't think you're just cashing in on a trophy, on an easy platinum like I did with My Name is Mayo. I want to say Taco Master, but there's at least gameplay in Taco Master rather than just tapping the fucking jar of mayo, right? So for me, My Name is Mayo is still a lesser platinum trophy of just like, well, clearly you only did it for this one reason. What I want to do here is jump into Trophy Time, combine the segments here, because the Trophy Time, this trophy can go fuck itself award is from The Big Spoon, who wrote in and said, Colin and Greg, I think I have a pretty solid submission for this trophy can go fuck itself. It's been bothering me for years. Persona 4 Golden is one of the most revered Vita games, but it has been sitting on my list at an infuriating 98% since early 2013. The bronze trophy, hardcore Rosette fan, here,
oh, yeah, that's
250 of Risei's navigation lines, is that last trophy I need for the platinum. I did an entire playthrough dedicated to acquiring this trophy, parentheses, following one of many very in-depth guides written for this one trophy,
and you didn't get it?
And I apparently failed. There isn't any in-game counter for her lines, so there's no way to know if I'm even close. I also hate to say it, but it does taint this amazing experience I had with this game. Whenever someone mentions Persona 4 Golden, I think, what an awesome game, but fuck! And I understand what he's talking about here, The Big Spoon, because I remember when Goldfarb and Steimer were going for that platinum, and they looked like crazy people with notepads and things and crossing out lists, and the Rosette one's a great example of a really shitty trophy. Really shitty.
Yeah, the Persona 4 list is just bad generally, which is why I think that I'm confident that the Persona 5 list won't be that bad.
Yeah.
They must know.
You hope so. Yeah, somebody listen to that one.
They must know.
But that's a really interesting point that I think applies to Nier Automata in the way of, okay, cool, so he's fucked on this one. And this is what kept me away from the Persona 4 Golden. Even though I tried, I was like, I'm going to try to do it because it was a downtime. And then I actually looked more into it. I'm like, fuck this. No, because this is my nightmare of cool. I've dedicated the entire playthrough. I think I've done everything, but I didn't. And I don't know how to easily go back and do it. Like, that sucks. And so it's this weird system. And this is the slippery slope thing of, do I think he should be able to use Persona 4 Golden in-game currency to buy that trophy to just have it pop and get his platinum? No, but I wouldn't mind if it was just that one thing. Nier Automata is the same situation. You've played the game three times, and I don't know how long the campaign is, but I'm sure it's hours. It's not like I'm busting through it in 2 hours.
I'm sure
or something.
It's not that long.
It's action. It's platinum. So whatever. You jump in, you're able to do this. To get the and this is based on just screenshots in Japanese. Who knows? To buy those trophies, get that currency, I'm assuming right now, giving them the benefit of the doubt, that it's a lot of in-game currency, which means I am grinding to get this currency to get out there and go do this. Do I mind that much? I think it's dumb. I think like this one on a really hard fucking hours and hours and hours, as long as Persona 4 Golden is, okay, that's fine. Nier Automata, I think that's weird and stupid, but I'm not like but I get really weird because, yeah, it is going to open up the door now to, yeah, okay, even if it is, My Name is Mayo 2, it does have a 1,000-hour trophy. Every time you tap, you get in-game currency, but it's a million in-game currency mayos, but you can buy mayos for 99 cents. It's, you know what I mean? Like, it is a can of worms that shouldn't be opened. There's no reason to do this, and it's going to get fucking, it's going to bite them in the ass, doubling back to last week's PS I Love You XOXO, where the whole thing was, trophies are broken, right? So it was 2 weeks ago. Trophies are broken, and No one is watching the store on this front, and there is no gatekeeper. And if there is no gatekeeper, how are they going to catch this when it does happen in a really shitty, devious way?
I mean, no one cares. I mean, that's the thing over there. Like, that, like I told you, like, East Origin has a fucking misspelled, just blatantly misspelled trophy that somehow got through. It's like, these people are asleep at the fucking, at the switch. And this particular...
Or the witch, depending on your part of the country.
Or the witch, which is, you know, she might have put you to sleep. But the situation, I mean, you're right in the sense that, I mean, it is ultimately meaningless. But it is a bridge too far for me, and it's just different than saying, like, spend a million currency and you get the trophy, as opposed to saying, like, spend a million currency and get the trophy you're missing.
Yeah.
That's just strange. Like, I don't understand how that's possible, that they allow that. That's basically having access to a trophy debug menu. And yeah, the currency might be rare, but like, what is the point of doing that? Just make your trophies easier. Like, it's just strange.
Make a good list of trophies. Yeah.
If you don't have all the trophies in a game after two or three playthroughs, that's just stupid. You know, unless you're not trying to get them. But if you're trying to get them, you know, everything should be gotten on one playthrough, first of all. I don't agree.
I'm just looking. I want more information. I want to see if anybody's done more translation, because I'm concerned, or interested, I should say. Is it, yeah, can you go through this? Oh, here you go. Unlock the, oh, I got a hamburger ad. Carl's Jr. Don't knock down the walls, Colin. Yeah, finish three cycles of Nier Automata and complete the full story. Location is over there. Find the strange resistant woman in the resistance camp. She's available 24/7. Talking to her will reveal a large list of options. Select request unlocking you know what at the bottom of the list. That opens up the trophy list. Each trophy is numbered, so you'll have to check the description to see what you're buying. The basic pricing guide goes like this. Bronze trophy, 50,000. Silver trophies, 100,000. Gold trophies, 200. They're extremely expensive, and buying all of them will be very costly. But if you're looking for an alternate method to platinum, this is it. Don't forget, if you're purchasing a trophy, it's unlocked forever, meaning you can exploit the system with a little save file trickery.
Yep. I mean, that's what I was thinking too. Like, you could just absolutely just get 200,000 currency
there
and just
go.
Buy them, shut it off, buy them. Yeah, because the trophy system's not tied to your save.
Great point. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I wasn't thinking like a mischievous bad
very
guy.
Stupid.
Very dumb.
Very, very dumb. Profoundly dumb.
Yeah. So no, that shouldn't happen. And I'm more worried about what's going to happen for other games going forward. Colin, let's check in with the readers. Thanks to Jericho, as always, for going over to kindoffunny.com/PSQ, compiling all the questions for us so we get in there and get either. Colin, I'm going to let you pick them. It's a Colin Pick'em Day. You ready?
I love Colin Pick'em Day.
You can have extreme sports video games, remote play friendly games. We answered a lot already. Or GameStop.
None of the other two are really very appealing to me.
Anth Anonymous says, hello, Colin and Greg. So I was watching the episode of Colin Was Right About GameStop, and there is something I would like to specifically, respectfully disagree with. I don't always agree with Colin, but I respect his opinion, and I would like him to rethink his opinion on something. Colin stated that Game Informer's continued relevance is largely due to GameStop's in-store subscription service. While this may help the sales of the magazine, I disagree that this has much to do with Game Informer's relevance. I can't speak to the magazine's sales itself. However, Game Informer's staff writes some great articles and features, makes great video content, and fosters a pretty big community, not unlike all the best friends. GI's editors do some real journalism, in my opinion. Their interviews especially have been insightful and often make me interested in someone I have never heard of before. Also, Andy McNamara and Andrew Reiner have been around for a long time and know the business pretty well. Leadership like that certainly contributes to the continued success of what they do over there. Anyway, feel free to dismiss me if you think I'm wrong, Colin. Just wanted to get the opinion out there. And hey, I would agree with you on this, but then we would both be wrong. Smiley emoticon. Real talk, though. I love you guys. Keep up the great content. Anthony.
Well, I mean, I respect where he's coming. I mean, he is wrong. GameStop's, you basically get a subscription to Game Informer for even being part of their Power Up program or whatever the fuck it's called, right?
Yeah.
So this makes it more enticing to advertisers. Also, the fact that Game Informer gets, its cover stories, because you have to compete with them at IGN. They get their cover stories and they're really early access because it's on a shelf at GameStop where pre-orders
Everyone
are made.
Everyone sees it when you go in there. Yeah.
You're categorically wrong, but I respect what you're saying in the sense that I'm not talking about. I know people there. I actually personally know them. So that's not what the piece was about at all.
Exactly.
And it was
the
relevance
of the magazine and the fact that in this day and age there is a magazine still around doing that well is what you're talking about, is because of its relationship to GameStop.
100%. It would not exist if GameStop didn't own it.
The quality of the articles is not in question.
No,
the quality
no, no,
of the
no.
staff is not. Those guys are great. Yeah.
But you have to understand that it is a GameStop has it for a reason. It is a it is another reason to be part of that ecosystem, that GameStop ecosystem. But it is also a way to gain incredible advertising revenue from companies, expose games that people want pre-ordered. I bet you every fucking day, many, many times, someone picks up that issue of whatever with whatever on the cover, of Game Informer with whatever on the cover, and is like, I want to pre-order this now. That's money in the bank for the developers. It's money in the bank for the publishers. That's money in the bank for GameStop itself. And so I appreciate what you're saying, because on a personal level, I know those guys. I mean, I've known people that have worked there for years, and they're very friendly and they're very talented. That team's actually stayed together for a long time. It's not a commentary on them at all. They'd all be fine without Game Informer, by the way. It's a commentary on Game Informer itself, Game Informer's relevance. Game Informer would have gone out of business many years ago, like every other gaming magazine, if it didn't have that. So you're wrong, but I appreciate you writing in, and I think you're right in the sense that they are very quality.
I feel like, if anything, his interpretation was wrong in terms of what you meant by relevance, because I agree with you when it sat and explained out, and I agree with you, obviously, when I heard it in the episode, but calling that out. Mr. Yasman 300, which always makes me think of the birth control Yaz. And I'm sure he doesn't mean that, but I always think of these girls. Yaz. Greetings, guys, from Bahrain. Why is Joe Carnahan lying about meeting Naughty Dog and them being happy with the Uncharted movie script? Druckmann said on Twitter that he and the studio never met him or read the script in a recent interview on Collider.com. Joe said, quote, and what I've heard is that the Naughty Dog guys are really happy with it. But who knows? That could be like Donald Trump hearing something. That may not be true at all. He also said that he wrote the script as an R-rated film. Everything this asshole is saying is him basically disrespecting Naughty Dog and the fans. Thanks for taking my questions. I think you're jumping to conclusions there about him being an asshole.
So Neil's a personal friend of ours. You're going to have dinner with him this week. I won't be here. So you can relay word to him about this. I think his tweets were a complete overreaction to what was actually said. Mm. And I understand that they're probably upset that they're not involved or don't want to be involved or they don't want this movie to exist. There's something at Naughty Dog is not right with this movie. And people there are not right with it. I think that you can read into that pretty safely with Neil's tweets about it. But the guy, to his credit, never said that Naughty Dog for sure knew. He said that's what I've been told. And he probably, frankly, was told that.
And that's so, the thing. It's like, how does this happen?
There's mad for the wrong person.
It's Hollywood, and there's a million different layers of agents and people and studio execs in this movie that's been fucking in limbo and hell forever. Like, I'm sure that he turned it into whoever. They did it. They saw it. These people comes back, and in some passing thing, like, oh, yeah, and the people who made the game saw it, too, and they like it. Maybe, and what probably meant was a Sony executive saw it, not Naughty Dog.
Or it could have been a Sony side producer. It could have been anyone. Naughty Dog's also a big studio. Neil would obviously know, but I saw that Neil tweet, and I was like, that's... To be fair, that is a complete overreaction of what was said. I understand that they don't want to be insinuated of being involved in it, probably because it's going to suck.
Yeah.
But and obviously Neil doesn't make bad stories, but and Neil's also was hands on with The Last of Us's movie, which might have not been an option for him. So I think there's more to the story. You'll probably learn when you have dinner with him, but I think we can agree. I mean, maybe not, but I think he was overreacting.
I think it was just
what was said.
If there
was no caveat that said, by the way, I don't know that this is real. If he just said, oh, and I heard the Naughty Dog guys love it.
Yeah.
Even then, I'd be like, oh, you heard it.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying the Naughty Dog guys love it. I mean, these are different sentences.
More than anything is I think that if you're looking at it as just a reaction to the writer, then yeah, I think it's an overreaction. I think more than anything, it was Neil being very clear and then in parentheses, Naughty Dog being very clear that we have nothing to do with this movie.
Well, we know that.
Well, do we, like people all the time, like go back and forth thinking that they're somehow involved with this and they're somehow people are always confused. That's why it needs to be a big stick moment of like, hey, no, we don't know what's happening with this thing. Don't believe anything you hear about us being involved with it.
It's just one of those things with Neil where it's like, he's right and so good about so many things. It's like me. Like, I'm not wrong more than once, twice a year. But you have to remind me of the times that I'm wrong so that we really build up the times that I'm right. And this is just one of those times for Neil.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
You know how they say a broken clock's right twice a day?
Yeah.
For me, they're saying like that fully functioning clock happens to be wrong twice a year. That's the
same. They do say that. Yeah. That is another saying they say about clocks quite a bit too. I do agree with that 100%. I think Neil was in his right.
Make
your point.
What'd you say?
I think Neil was in his right. Make your point.
What?
I think Neil was right.
You do?
Go ahead and make his point. Yeah, because again, I don't think it was directed just at him. I think it's at this entire studio structure and what's happening with the movies. I think he's trying to get it out there that in 140 characters, don't listen to what people say about this movie and Naughty Dog's involvement. Because it's going to continue to happen. Thank God Mark Wahlberg's gone.
I just don't think he...
What do you think about it being R-rated?
It's not really in the spirit of the movie. or the game.
Yeah.
But well, that's fine. I mean, there could be different rules. Like, actually, Drake is a mass murderer in Uncharted. I mean, if Uncharted was a movie, it would be fucking NC-17.
Exactly. That's the thing. So, how much blood is involved? How much sex? How much cursing?
And I know that it's not like a bloodbath when he kills people, but he is murdering, just straight murdering people in that game, left and right and center. I mean, I don't know how you can make that into a PG-13 movie, but they could do it. Indiana Jones.
I was going to say, well, what's Indy? But then Indy didn't ever really kill a lot of people, did he?
No, he didn't kill a lot of people, but
he killed people,
also, it was before
PG-13.
Well, Temple of Doom might have been one of the first ones to be... Kevin?
Yep.
Look up Temple of Doom in relation to PG-13. I feel like that might have been one of the very first ones that was PG-13.
We had a conversation about this on one of the shows.
But not, Raiders was not, was, it came out beforehand. And obviously, Last Crusade was out years after.
While Kevin looks that up, whatever. I'm going to read a letter here from Neil. Not that Neil. Neil in San Diego. Who says...
Calm down. Oh, he's not angry.
No, it's not that Neil. Neil from San Diego wrote in and said, just thought, and this is a free ad from him, just thought you might take a minute to discuss how connecting your Amazon Prime account to your Twitch account gives Kinda Funny fans a relatively new way to support the cause. Because of the rigors of work, I'm rarely able to listen to you guys in real time on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames, so mostly I catch the shows in podcast form, and I don't spend much time on Twitch. As such, I was unaware that I could use my Amazon Prime /Twitch integration to subscribe to Kinda Funny and support you directly until I started messing around with it and figured it out accidentally. Hope to use my Amazon Prime membership to subscribe to your Twitch stream and support you with the money I am already spending. Yeah, exactly. Love you. Keep up the great work. Yeah, good point, Neil. If you haven't been paying attention, ladies and gentlemen, Amazon Prime now has a thing called Twitch Prime. You get one free Twitch subscription. So even if you never use Twitch, but you have Amazon Prime, it'd be cool to come over and subscribe to Kinda Funny Games. It refreshes every month, too, so you either have to keep giving it to us, or you can give it to us, and then Alfredo, and then whoever else you want to go do.
You should just give it to us.
Yeah, I mean, fuck Alfredo. Okay, can we be honest for a second?
My cheeseburger and Uber have it cost money.
These beeps aren't coming for free. All right?
Dude, I've tried so many times to get beeps recently, and they're trying to charge me $20 for delivery.
Are you doing it like during peak times and shit?
I guess, but I mean, it's just like...
You just want a fucking
burger.
You have
burger. Some audacity to charge $20 for delivering anything.
Yeah, that's true. That's 100% true. You're nailing that one.
$10. That's not a bridge too far for me. Talking a lot about bridges today.
I'm going to stop it there. Colin. Are you ready to meet your new best friend?
You skipped trophy time today again.
Oh, well, we merged in. You got trophies? Are there trophies to talk about you want to talk about?
I don't know.
Because I said we are merging it. I read the fuck the trophy thing.
Oh, I see. Well, Horizon trophies are up. Yeah. The only thing I want to say about that is, well, we should take a moment.
Do it! Trophy time,
because people,
bitch!
Because people are going to care about Horizon trophies.
I'm in the bay, bitch! Easy Platinum, apparently you missed one. Just don't piss people off.
But there's another game that whose trophies are live that I think you'll be quite interested in.
Quite.
But first, Horizon. Horizon has 48 bronze, 5 silver, 2 gold, and a platinum. So it's pretty bronze heavy. So for this one, you're going to get a lot of these trophies naturally. We can talk about this game with complete authority. Greg has the platinum. I have 82 or 83% of it or something like that. I want people to keep an eye on the... So first of all, there's trophies for leveling all the way up to 50, which is the cap. I did that naturally. I don't think you really have to grind for that. Although you did grind for it?
No. Okay. What I did is, so no spoilers, there's the point of like, all right, cool, you can't go, once you go here, this is the end game. You jump in and you do that and you fucking level really quick based on some of the things you're fighting. And so then it goes, all right, cool, we're kicking you back out. You can keep playing and it will come back. So I did it, the ending, once on my own. Then I was like, do I have all the optional companions or whatever? Not companions, like Fallout. Do I have all the optional people to join my fight? Went and did the fight again, didn't have them all. And so I had to do it a third time and like, but by then I had it at 50, but like that second time gave me another boost.
The trophy that people want to keep an eye on here that I think is missable, that I'm pretty sure is missable, is all allies joined. And the trophy is a bronze, and it says, given Aloy's actions, all possible optional allies join the defense. I think that I'm not going to get that trophy, which pisses me the fuck off. Because I'm not playing the game again. So I'm just not going to get the platinum. But everything else should be good.
Yeah, look into that, because I still feel like, I don't know.
That would piss me off so bad, and that seems like such a random fucking wrench to put in the wheel. Like, I don't understand. This trophy list was so good.
But it's like, yeah.
And it's like...
Read the description. Is it all optional or all possible?
Given Aloy's actions, all possible optional allies join the defense.
See, I think that's the thing. Possible option. Because there's one I want to tell you about, and I don't think it's the same one.
So what you're saying, because I think it's saying that like there are optional allies, and you have to get all of the possible optional allies, like every one of them.
Yeah.
And I know I made a choice that is going to preclude me from getting that trophy.
There's one that I don't want to talk about on air that I think
I'm going to punch someone in the fucking face if I miss that trophy.
Herman? Just,
Herman's going down.
No, Herman, run!
Although I hope I'm wrong, because the trophy list is like, so that's what people are going to discover, is the trophy list is just so good. It's
good. Really good trophies.
And there's a few that I was missing with, like, just get all the collectibles, do all the quests. You don't even have to get to 100%. There are a lot of like very minutia based story collectibles, like hundreds and hundreds of them. You don't have to get, but you should, because you can read them and they're interesting, or listen to them. But yeah, I think people will enjoy this trophy list. Greg, the other trophy list that went up today, I don't know if you saw it. Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Woo! Kevin, are you ready?
Yes.
You and I are playing it.
32 bronze, 8 silver, 3 gold, and a platinum. Skydive 10 times is one of them. That's
got it.
Fearless.
Nailed
Pull,
it.
Shot an enemy chopper out of the air with a mortar.
Oh,
Road Warrior, drove a vehicle for 100 kilometers. Deadly Curious, interrogated 20 sources, etc. That is, you know, defeat your first boss, finish the story as a gold trophy, etc. Completed the smuggling operation, the production operation, the security operation, influence operation, all story missions. Those are all trophies. That's a gold.
Sounds good. How, where, is any multiplayer bullshit
we're
coming
getting,
up?
We're getting,
fucking
we're
shit.
We're scrolling. I don't know. I'm reading it for the first time right now. Eagle-eyed, mark 100 enemies with binoculars. Completed 3 missions with another player. So there's one.
Okay, that's easy. I got that.
Let's see. Played each type of side quest. That trophy's called the Spice of Life.
Ooh.
Collected all the bonus medals. I don't know if those are going to be attached to online stuff. Bought all upgrades. Maxed out skills. Maxed out your XP and levels as a gold trophy. I'll tell you, Greg, that's the only online trophy.
Huh, all right. That sounds like a pretty good list so far. Were there hidden ones?
It's hard for me to tell if they're hidden or not on this
gotcha.
List. Let me. There's
you
a
have to
way
do the math. You don't have to do the math or anything.
No, I think there's a way. Is there a way?
To show, to hide them or whatever. Yeah. You're on ExoFace?
No, I'm on PSN profiles.
Then yeah, they should break it down at the top. Show where? Hidden or whatever.
Show hidden where? I don't know.
All right, no problem.
But obviously, well, for all games moving forward, you can update that people might not have noticed. But if you're in trophies, you can now go. I mean, this is for a few months. You can go to a trophy that's hidden on your cross media bar and press square, and it'll show it to you now. So nothing's hidden forever.
Nothing's hidden forever.
But that's it for trophies.
All right, good.
Now you can wrap up the show.
Now you want to meet your best friend?
I have too many friends.
Too bad. You got this new best friend. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, PS, I love this best friend. XOXO is where one of you writes in over on kindoffunny.com/forums. You give us your PSN name and a message of why you need friends. We read your name. Everybody friends you and sends you loving requests. And that's how the best friends work. This one comes from what could be, and it's not this week, but it could be one of the worst PlayStation Network names of all time. It is Culminator hyphen underscore. Now here, we'll read it to you. C0L3M4N4T0R-underscore. That is a fucking terrible name.
That is the worst name. Way worse than what I was even going to say something awful that probably wasn't even a name. Never mind. Go on.
Hey, best friends. Last year, I moved from Texas to attend college in South Carolina and have had trouble making new friends. I would really appreciate some cool people to play Overwatch and Titanfall 2 with, or maybe some Dark Souls 3 if you're into that jolly cooperation. Keep up the good work, Colin and Greg. And then again, Culminator, and I'm not reading it again. P.S. The O's are actually zeros. I know it's a terrible name. Please, God, Shuhei, let me change my name. At least he knew. The P.S. was on the back page. My apologies.
Rumor, I heard, you know, I mean, I've heard a lot of things over the years about this from people that I thought I can rely on, but I hear it's this summer.
Believe when I see it.
Yep, me too. I'll believe it literally even after they announce it. I'll be like, okay.
This week's Forgotten PlayStation game comes from Outlaw Reaver, who I feel like puts him in every week, but he does good ones, I guess. What's up, Colin and Greg Way? I have this week's Forgotten PlayStation game. Do either of you remember Genji? Dawn of the Samurai on PS2 from developer Game Republic. It was a third-person hack-and-slash game in the vein of Onimusha. Surprisingly enough, Sony greenlit a sequel, Genji, Days of the Blade, as a launch title for PS3. Unfortunately, the sequel was awful, fuck that static camera, and is notorious for the giant enemy crab meme during E3 2006. Thanks so much.
That really was one of the really great moments.
It's historically accurate battles. Giant enemy crab. Fucking the cut up of that. $599. God, what were they thinking?
I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Like PSN's disaster. Worst name of the week comes from kindoffunny.com/forums. This one is actually the name, his bad PSN name, so I can't read it till I get there because it needs to be there or whatever. Oh, hold on 1 second. Oh, no, he got killed. So this is Bob. Bob writes in and says, hey, Greg and Colin. I know this is supposed to be your own name, but this was just too funny for me not to share. Playing Battlefield 1 multiplayer, running across the sand dunes in Suez, 1916 Egypt. When I come face to face with a man who shall live in history along with the greats of Lawrence of Arabia, a name untainted by the age of antiquity. That name, straight nutting in your face. please, Shuhei, let us change your names. It's spelled S-T-R-8, the number 8, nut, N-U-T-I-N, yo face. Straight nuttin' in your face. Thanks, Bob. And thank you to Blue Apron for sponsoring this episode of PS I Love You XOXO. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/iloveyou. Of course, I use Blue Apron. They send you the prepackaged ingredients. You go there, a little checklist of what to do. You go, you mix it all up, you get a little meal. You look great on the Instagram.
You just have to put it in the bowl and mix it and everything's
pretty much, yeah. Well, sometimes it goes in the oven. If you're making pudding, that's how you'd make it. Just mix it all in the bowl.
Put packet 3 and 4 into the bowl.
There you go. It's steak tartare. Like, no, that's not how it works at all. Remember, Blue Apron is affordable for less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you never get bored. You can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose the method that fits your needs. Check out this week's menu again, ladies and gentlemen. First three meals free, free shipping by going to blueapron.com/iloveyou. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. That's blueapron.com/iloveyou. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been PS I Love You XOXO episode 76. Remember, this is a product of kindoffunny.com, so go there, subscribe to the other YouTube channels, watch the other videos, enjoy the podcast. It posts every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific time on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe, and it's the number one PlayStation podcast because of your support, so thank you for that. Every episode of PS I Love You XOXO ends in a song in a segment we call Singing a Shuhei. This is where one of you talented motherfuckers goes to kindoffunny.com/PSM and you give me an MP3 of your song that I can play at the end of our MP3 and a YouTube version of your song so I can annotate from our YouTube video. This one, Colin, comes from Marcus.
Marcus.
He says, hey, Greg and Colin, I'm a longtime listener and fan of your stuff from Germany. Love all your podcasts and all your other stuff going back to since the IGN times. My girlfriend just recently started a little music project, and the first song she released on YouTube happens to be Through the Valley, inspired by the trailer of The Last of Us 2. She would be super happy if you play her song in your podcast so more video game loving people would get to know it. Since the project is super new, they don't have any social media profiles yet. Hope you like the song. From Berlin with love, Marcus.
He's got order operations a lot of whack here, but okay.
Come on, Marcus.
What's the point of releasing the music if you have nowhere to find it?
Maybe she's not trying to make money. It's just for art.
It's just art, man.
Just fired off into YouTube. The Garbage Planet is Brian Altano described it once, and there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Marcus's girlfriend for the song from Last of Us 2. I guess she doesn't have a name. I don't know who's in the video with her. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve.
Yeah, she's
just his girlfriend. That's
well
all.
Done.
I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I fear no. Because I'm blind to it all, and my mind and my guns, they comfort me. Because I know I kill my enemies when they come. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell on this earth forevermore. Still I walk beside the still waters, and they restore my soul. But I can't walk on the path of the wild because I'm warm. When I came upon a man at the top of the hill, calling himself the savior of the human race, said he came to save the world from destruction and pain. But I said, how could you save the world from itself? Cause I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I fear no evil because I lie. Still I walk beside the still waters, and they restore my soul. But I know when I die, my soul is dead.